do that before.
Yeah,
that was really luscious. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. That was heavenly. Good morning. Welcome to the West Valley Center for Spiritual Living. I'm Reverend Karen Rice, and I'm the senior minister, the spiritual leader of this community, and very happy to be here on Sunday. And yes, welcome fall. I am so happy. I love that the World Peace Day falls on the first day of the fall. And boy, I don't know about your patio, but this morning there was a different weather condition on my patio, as if it followed that calendar. So welcome, welcome. We're really delighted that you're here joining us, and I am dedicating the message this morning to Rodney Bradford in the front row because of your wise, sagey old Uncle Coy. I heard that your Uncle Coy once said, it's going to come back around. So you must ask him later why I know that, and then we'll see if he can figure out why I know that. That'd be fun. So I'm talking this morning about this idea of the hunger for reunion, and thank you for the reading and the song choices. Really, just beautifully, sort of shows to me the harmony of all the universe, the way things do come together when we put it out there and we activate the work of the law to create an experience of beauty and perfection and power and harmony in knowing that there is a divine order for all things, including the Sunday service. So we're looking today at that idea of how things fit together, and I want to be talking about community. We're going to start with community. We're going to talk about communion as well, and what I know is that community is good for the soul. It's good for us to come together. In fact, last Sunday, I actually quoted some statistics that indicate if you attend church regularly, you will likely live 7 to 14% longer than the average unchurched person. So let's hear it for church. Woohoo! And it's funny to say that because we really don't consider ourselves much of a church. We are a spiritual center so that we can encompass definitions of coming together in spiritual community that go beyond the walls of any church or any single religious view, and that's why we honor all paths. But the word community is quite clearly from the same root of the word communion, and there's no accident in that. The Latin root for both of those words is obliging together. And when I heard that, when I looked that up and I saw that both of those words are about obliging together, what I see is that coming together in such a way as a spiritual community or any gathering, as we'll talk about as we move along this morning, but it shows us that we are sort of obligated to one another. So that yearning, that way we hunger for some kind of reunion, a union that we have sensed or experienced previously, what we can see is that not only do we hunger for it and have a yearning for it intuitively, but that we are really obliged or obligated to uphold each other in such a way. It leads us to understanding the greater connection, the divine connection, which then brings us to looking at the topic of oneness. We look at the way we are spiritually whole, perfect, whole, and complete, we say sometimes. And that idea of community and being obligated to come together is a beautiful way for us to see that ultimate reality. And then we're looking at reality with a capital R. That means it implies something so much greater than just what happens to us individually on our human journey. So all of this stuff really excites me because I see the way, even in the way we meet on a Sunday morning or we come together in a different configuration on a Wednesday evening or all the many things we do, we are satisfying that ultimate hunger for reunion. So we have this gorgeous invitation to reunite with the source of life, with love. That's why I like that term from A Course in Miracles that says, says, Return to Love. Marianne Williamson named her, I think that was her very first book, actually, Return to Love. And that whole idea of being obliged to each other also has significance when I think of the teaching of the Course in Miracles, because I studied that well before I found Science of Mind. That was my anchor in New Thought. But what I see is there is this call for us to do our work and to recognize that we need each other. And there's actually a passage in that book that says we are never healed alone. So I like that, and I like to expand that out to see the way that even sometimes we think the ways that we kind of bump into each other or have problems in relationships or family issues, because none of us here were not connected to a dysfunctional family. We all could define that in one little twist of an idea of something we think happened, but we all have different views, and that's where it becomes dysfunctional. But there is that way that we then become wiser and we make better choices as we can if we want to. And some of us just like the chaos, and so we stay in there and play all those games. But you're entitled to do that too if you want. But what I notice about this longing to come together, there's a need to serve, there's a need to belong that all of us feel from time to time. And I was thinking that if we look at sort of the way when we come together, we create a new energetic, you know. I always say each class I teach has a very specific configuration. It becomes like an entity. Every spiritual community will become like an entity in the way that those values will surface and present themselves. And every community is slightly different than the next community. Every group is a little bit different. Well, what I was thinking is that it reminds me of what it's like to sing in a choir. I don't have a lot of experience singing, but I, as you know, if you've been here before, I'd love to sing, and it takes a lot to stop me from singing. I apologize often, but I can't help myself. And that idea of singing in a choir where your voice resonates with in that group resonation, right? And there's a vibration, a collective vibration. It's such a beautiful example of how one voice alone, you know, it's lovely to listen to Kathy, but if we had 15 Kathys in the room, wow, now we have a real different experience. And in fact, Kathy has some new equipment. She's actually singing with herself this morning. That was really beautiful. Mm-hmm. I like that. Is that looping? It's oh my gosh, it was really, really beautiful. The way voices come together creates something that feels really good. And there are other ways we come together. The marching band, you know, I was in drill team in high school, and I loved what happened when we would all get together and we would learn the steps and we would learn the routines, and then the drill team leaders would help us to be more precise, so we're all doing it at exactly the same way at the same time. And there was something so fulfilling about that. And so I really don't even have words for what it felt like to be. It's like you're invisible, especially like out on the football field. As an individual, you're invisible, but look at the magnificence you create when you come together. So those are great examples of what happens when we join others in a similar way, right? In a specific vibration. But there are other ways we come together as humanity where it's very practical for us to be together. And I had this vision while I was writing yesterday that it's like an old Western, a cowboy movie, and the neighbor down the way, his barn catches on fire, and all the neighbors come together, all the people in town that can see the smoke, they come together, and then what do? Somebody stands at the well, and they make a line of people, and they start filling buckets, and they pass the buckets down the line, and the person closest to the flame throws the bucket of water trying to extinguish the flame, and if they get there in time, and they work well together, their goal is to achieve, that they can extinguish the fire. They can achieve good through doing that. And that's a beautiful thing to watch. And as I contemplated that, I began to reflect on the time that Hugh and I spent in, where is he? Okay, distracted. I'm back. isn't that funny? It's like suddenly I was aware he's not in the room. Hugh and I were living in developing countries. In 1995, we spent almost the whole year in this amazing experience. I was on spiritual pilgrimage. He was working. It was heaven for me. And we were first in Bangkok. And in Bangkok in 1995, they were really just, there were skyscrapers going up everywhere. So you saw the, what do you call those? Cranes were all over the city. I have pictures that it's very quite impressive. And but if you would get close to the construction sites, what you would see was that they were taking good use of the 10 million people that live in the city of Bangkok, and that they were not, they would have like 12 or 15 men in a long line carrying bundles of rebar. Do you know how heavy rebar is? And they would have this long train of humans carrying this rebar, taking it closer to the construction site. Another time we were in, we were living in Jakarta in Indonesia at the time, and we went out for a drive in the countryside, and we came across the, it was sort of startling to see it, but they were building a new highway, and it was going to, it looked like it was going to be a pretty big, impressive highway. And they had already excavated the, you know, they had dug it out, dug out the road, and the earth is very red like it is here in places. So you could see exactly where the road was going to go, but there was this line of like 100 people. They were, and probably all men, I don't know for sure. But it's the same situation in Indonesia. They're greatly populated, and they don't pay wages that are, the wages are very poor, very low. And so it's actually cheaper to use manpower than it is to bring in the big trucks and tractors. And we saw a line of 100 men passing. I didn't count them. I'm just, you know, estimating. It was a lot. It was a lot of men. And they were passing baskets that had gravel in them. And they were just passing back, just like this. That was all they were doing, was passing. And then the guys at the end were dumping it down. And then I suppose, what did they do next, John Kruger? Did they bring sand in on top of that or something? So they're getting ready to pave it, but they're using manpower. So you can see where we benefit from humanity coming together to accomplish a huge task, like covering a giant road in rock. So it's kind of stunning. It's not the way we experience life here, but it is a way, I think we do on a smaller scale, and we do in spiritual community when we call people together to serve, to help. There he is. Hi, honey. I love you. So glad I can relax now. You missed the whole story about Bangkok and Indonesia. You'll have to listen to the recording. You would like that. I think you would. But we do that in community, and that's what service is about, that many hands make for light work. That's why we create opportunities to serve, because it fulfills that longing of our soul to have a shared experience together. You know, and that's, think about it, that's how they built everything. You know, that's how the pyramids would have been built, manpower, and then getting smart about, what would that be, geometry and how to move the big stones and all of that. You know, all of that is where you bring people together. The ancient castles, anybody that's been to Europe, it's so impressive. When you go to Europe for the first time, you come back to the Americas and you go, wow, we are so young compared to how ancient. You can feel the history in Europe. So all of that was done by bringing people together. But we also join together in ways that are sort of beyond practicality. Last week, on the 21st, we set our alarm clocks for 5 a.m., and we woke up in the privacy of our own homes, and we meditated for world peace. So it was a beautiful way. We have some odd experience of being united, connected in that vibration of one thing, world peace. And so thousands upon thousands of people all over the world were meditating at exactly that time, and we are impacted by that. So there are lots of ways, and I love to meditate in a group, even when we do it on the weekdays at 11 a.m. and there's only maybe five people here. Whoa, the vibration in this room with just a few of us, right, is really, it's not like anything else, except it's like meditating in a group. You can do that anywhere. But it's, what I'm saying is it's a deeper and sweeter experience when I meditate in community as compared to the meditation I do at home when I'm alone. You know, another way you see that longing of people to come together, sporting events. Sporting events, right? Football is showing up on our TV at home. I'm not real thrilled about it. I can tolerate baseball, but I don't get football. And people will paint their faces or take off their shirts and paint their bodies, and usually they shouldn't be taking off their shirt and showing that. And there's something very primal and tribal about that, right? We can see that there's something in it that is satisfying, or they are seeking to satisfy this very thing that we are talking about this morning. But we all do it in different ways. Uncle Coy would validate this truth. I'm certain of it. So it's about connecting and joining. And Cheryl, I left in my pink bag my Troward book. If you would run, get it for me, please. And so ultimately, what we realize is that, or it might be on the table, I'm not sure where I left it, but it didn't make it out here. What we realize is as we start to study principle, as we look at the creative process, which we're doing in all the classes we're teaching right now, Reverend Cheryl is teaching this class, Thomas Troward, and it's from the book The Creative Process in the Individual. I know, right? And they're actually listening to the recordings and then stopping the recording and chatting about what they just heard. I can't imagine a better way to really get Troward at the you know, down in the gut of your being, you know, the real ground of your being. But I was looking at chapter 4, the manifestation of the life principle. The manifestation of the life principle, the principle itself. And this is what Troward has to say about that. He says, there are two leading principles to which I have drawn attention. The first is the power of spirit to create. Number one, first thing we look at is the power of spirit to create. And second, the individual's recognition of the basic principle of unity. All right, so God, Spirit, the great creator of all things, that which we are created in the image and likeness of, and therefore we are creative beings. So number one, Spirit, and number two, our individual way of recognizing the basic principle of unity, of union, of connection, of needing and yearning for something to happen with each other so that we can move deeper in our ability to understand that what we are really yearning for is that connection to source, to that which is the ultimate reality. And when we get in harmony with all of that, our lives change. Listen to what else he says here. In our recognition, this harmony, this natural order that we attain unity with, so we recognize the union of life. I mean, I sometimes think the web of life is a beautiful way to look at it because we have the internet now. We have the World Wide Web. And we can see that everything I Google leads me to 100 other things I wish I had time to Google, to dive deeper and look in. And so that whole idea of 6 degrees of separation, we begin to see that, ooh, we are so intimately connected that we can't even really put our mind around the idea. So he says that in our recognition of this harmony and the natural order that we attain unity with, the creative principle, we're with the creative principle, we are no longer tied to laws of matter. You know what that means? That means that no matter what you have experienced in your life, you are not bound to that. Ooh, you're so smart. I love it when we connect like that. It feels so good. we are not bound by any of our experiences. We are not limited by anything that's going on in the world. We are individualized expressions of truth. And all we have to do is recognize spirit and then step into that place of recognizing unity. And that's where the creative process, then the creative principle, he's calling it, then voila, things come into form. Our lives change. Everything shifts and changes. So ultimately, and perhaps I said this while I was waiting for you, but that what that means is that that brings us more freedom. It's not. It's more than freedom of choice. It's more than seeing that our choices do, different choices bring different results or effect, we might say, into our life. It is a way that we are aligned to that greater truth, and that is what heals us from anything that might ail us. It is why we can create health when we're experiencing what appears to not be health, the opposite of health. It is how we can constantly create a greater sense of well-being in our life in every regard. We come to know that perfection already exists within us because we come to really understand that this that we're talking about this morning is oneness. It is the whole principle that this faith, that all of New Thought, and you know, this whole idea of oneness really shows up in almost every faith. Every spiritual belief has their own variation of this, though they don't necessarily call it the same thing. So we are healed because we are restored to truth. We recognize that union, and then the healing happens in our mind, and our lives begin to change, and then our physical world that we live in also changes. It has no choice. It has to. It's the way the law works. We can never be separated from what we truly are. Ernest Holmes said, and we talked about this in the foundation class last week, Ernest Holmes said that our exalted thought, the higher thoughts we think, not when we're worried about stuff down here in the physical realm, when we exalt our thought and we're able to recognize that greater truth, that the perfection is there, desiring to be revealed through our living, through our own experiences, your exalted thought becomes a shining radiance that melts away adversity. Oh, I love that quote. That's in the Science of Mind textbook. Your exalted thought becomes a shining radiance that melts away adversity. Ernest Holmes also said, and many great contributors to New Thought said the same thing, but this is the way Ernest Holmes worded it. The most powerful healing agency known to humankind is a realization of the presence of God. I mean, that is, we want to be writing this down. We want to be, this would be a good tattoo somewhere where you could see it easily, right? The most powerful healing agency, the quickest way to heal anything that ails us is to become aware of the presence of God right there, right in the heart of that condition, whatever's going on. And here's a part that really struck me. This would be a fun talk to have with Reverend Cheryl. That we each do that in our own way. That's why we can say we are individualized expressions of God, because we're going to be unique and different in the way we see it, in the way we approach it, in the way that we manage it, and we're at choice. We're not all trying to get to some level that's the same. We just aim to be open to more possibility, to greater potential of our experience with spirit. So each of us then does all of that, and it doesn't matter how your mind works or how your mind doesn't work, if you're dyslexic or you got ADHD or you got some kind of injury, doesn't matter. Doesn't matter how much education you've had. It doesn't matter how you were raised. It doesn't matter if you can reason or not. The truth is that nobody has more than anybody else when it comes to spiritual truth. It's all here. It's already given. And then I think the next step from there is for us to acknowledge that it not only doesn't matter how we interpret it, but doesn't matter what we call it. So for some people, we just had this talk in practitioner studies, some people have a more impersonal, they see God as an impersonal idea. But others of us really need to know a more personal experience of oneness with God. And it neither matters. It doesn't matter if you see God as the absolute or God as the Father creator. It doesn't matter. There's only truth. And what matters is how you interpret it. And you get to do that. And there is no right or wrong. Don't let anybody tell you there's only one way to look at this stuff. Not even Reverend Cheryl. That's right. We ministers know this. So it's just going to work. You use the law, it's going to respond. It's working anyhow. But when we step up and we're consciously doing it, that's when we are, as Holmes said, realizing the presence of God. And that is the most powerful and profound experience we can have as human beings. So in my view, which certainly must be important. I'm up here. It's Sunday morning. I got something to say. In my view, or through my ideas, the way I see it is that the purpose of all doctrine, the purpose of every religion, if you look at the integrity that from the very beginning, the purpose of all Bible study and all spiritual traditions that gather together to worship, to be educated, to find that way to have exalted thoughts so that our adversities can melt away, all of it is just an opportunity for us to be pulled closer to God and to that experience of oneness. So the one who senses a close union with God, let's say someone who has never been in a church, never been exposed to religion, that one can have an experience walking in nature that would be identical to what some people come to church on Sunday to have, right? Without having to name it that. The one who, irregardless of spiritual background, who can see the beauty in a rose, and those are beautiful, by the way, thank you, who can contemplate that beauty and smell it and get the essence of the beauty itself, those people, even though they may not be spiritually educated or actively participating in some formal spiritual way, they are no less holy than a monk or a rabbi, or even the man Jesus himself. And though for some it's hard to hear, I really do believe that in so many ways, this is what the Jesus message was all about. And it's time for us to broaden and to be more inclusive and to not think there's only one way, one approach to having that experience of oneness with God. So that place that we say we live and move and have our being in that one, in the ground of all being in existence with God, I live and move and have my being in that one. We're talking here about that which is seen and that which is unseen. We're talking about that which is known and unknown and in some ways unknowable. You know, we can only have the experience of it. The Buddha spoke of this as it is but a breath, Buddha said. In the book of Ecclesiastes in the Old Testament, it is written that it is as impermanent as the morning dew. Lovely. So it transcends all finite reality because it is the ultimate reality. And And it's hard to contemplate, and yet it's the most important truth we could wrap our minds around. Rabbi Rami Shapiro, ooh la la, I have new love in my life. He does a question and answer thing in a magazine I subscribe to, health and spirituality, something like that. And I've noticed him for a long time. I look forward to reading his column. And so I don't know why I never looked to see if he's written books, and I have been collecting his books now. And so, he speaks my language. He talks about all this stuff, the way we need to reshape our idea of what God is so that it's more inclusive, and only he uses all his own words. I love it. Rabbi Shapiro said this: imagine the ultimate reality as an infinite ocean, and we are a wave of that ocean that knows itself to be one with all the other waves. And it knows itself to be one with the infinite ocean itself, the eternal I. Then when we look at this idea of what is the eternal I, it knows the eternal I as the wetness of both the ocean and the wave. Now, if we contemplate things like this, we begin to see that what we're talking about is not a thing. It's a quality. It's an essence. It reminds me of beauty. And there is no single name for that. That's why sometimes it's indescribable. And the harder we try to put words to some kind of fabulous experience we just had, we do it in injustice because we remove ourselves further from it by trying to give it words. And so we as humanity, maybe not the people in this room, but we as I speak of humanity in general, we're used to speaking about God as some kind of an object to be worshipped. And that does not help us. That does not invite intimacy in that relationship. And so we've given God names. I think this is interesting. You know, we call God Brahma or Krishna or Jesus or Yahweh, Allah, Spirit, Mother, Father, God. We give it names so that we can try and feel a more personal relationship and understand it, because that's what human beings do. We name things. It's challenging to suggest it's possible to have no name for God. But we don't have to give up our preferred name for God in order to find a way to join. Listen to this passage from Hinduism. 3,500 years ago, the first of the sacred writings, believed to be the oldest of the sacred writings from the Rig Veda, truth is one. Different people call it by different names. So there's no reason for us to limit ourselves, but I think we have every reason to reconsider our purpose, to re-examine that hunger for reunion, for connection, that yearning to feel in harmony with others and with that great other. So this now that we're speaking about this morning, this is a view of life that has the potential to leave no one out. And I think that's a great thing, because we all hunger, really, just for the same thing. And so I was thinking about my years of being involved in midwifery and childbirth. In childbirth education. And I was thinking about the way I observed. I used to tell this class when I was teaching pregnant couples, but I observed that there's a way we receive that newborn infant. And I would even take that further out, that I see the same thing when a newborn infant meets its grandparents for the first time, and even sometimes a stranger on the street who cannot resist peeking in the baby buggy. The first thing that happens is that overwhelming joy happens for the parent. Let's talk about the mother. They put the baby in the mother's arms for the first time, and such an unusual thing happens. She almost always greets the baby with this high-pitched voice. Oh, my baby, my baby, my baby. There's this very high-pitched thing that happens. And as she begins to touch her child, something shifts, and her voice deepens, and the connection looks extremely different. Now, I would say I felt that experience every time I held one of my 10 grandbabies for the first time. That there was something that overcomes you. It's like, oh, they're putting the baby in your arms, or you're walking to meet mom and she's holding the baby. And we then take, we start with that high pitch, but as we settle in, what I think is happening is we're calming. Something about the energy of the baby is calming to us. And so we change. It's like we pull in our energy, even though it's an exciting moment. And then the mom, the grandma, the stranger in the street will very often take one finger and reach out to touch the baby. Do you remember any of this? You touch the baby, and we like to touch their hands. And then we say the silliest things. Look how little it is. Every time. Every time, it doesn't matter how much the kid weighed, it's that tiniest little hand you've ever seen. And then something comes over us, and we want to talk about it. We want to talk about it. Oh, he's so small. Oh, she doesn't have any hair. She looks just like her mom. You know, and funny things happen. So, as if that's not enough, we adults have an instinct for putting our finger in the baby's hands, because what happens when you put your finger in a newborn baby's hands? They have an instinct to grasp it. It's part of the index on how they measure well-being right after birth. So you put your finger, if you're blessed and the hand is open and you put your finger in it, the baby's hand will close around your finger. And I think that's what we really hope will happen. We don't know it. We don't think it through, but I think we have an instinct to know we want that to be. And I think it's because we feel connected. You know, I mean, in one way, maybe with an infant, we feel needed because they so need us for survival. But we feel connected, and there's a point where words just, again, won't suffice. And I think the reason it's so incredible to have that experience is because something within us wakes up. And maybe it's not an intellectual thought, but I think that we remember at some level how wondrous and mysterious life is. And I think it's the very same reason that we gather together at football games and for the purpose of moving things. It's the reason protesters will gather together to protest. It's the same reason we want to sit around the campfire and tell stories together. There's something that calls us. It's like the way we like to join groups. You know, I remember in 1970-something, the first time I joined a food co-op. Oh, my word, it was so exciting to feel part of a group, especially because it involved nurturing and food, nourishing, and then the way that food nurtures us. There are these transformational ways we come together and connect with each other. And something in us is always looking for it, always sort of wanting to prove it. And I think what we're doing is we're looking for that experience of synergy. Synergy is such a good word. Buckminster, you know, synergy is when where that thing happens that draws people together for a purpose. Buckminster Fuller, some people call him Bucky. He said, synergy means behavior of whole systems, unpredicted by the behavior of their parts. You know, this is that the whole is greater than the sum of the parts. So there's this something that happens that takes on its own thing. It's probably what I mean when I say each class creates its own configuration at the level of the soul. It's a certain synergy that helps us to feel stronger, that helps us to feel more confident sometimes, that helps us to heal those things that ail us. We are somehow obligated to one another. We are obliged to recognize our common union. And so I just offer you that and invite you to contemplate that, to notice what beautiful gem is here for you to chew on during the week so that you can find that transformational place of personalizing the message that will then allow you to have more intimacy with the Creator. And so let us join now. And let us anchor the ideas, the words spoken in this message. Let us join together in the consciousness of prayer. So just take a deep cleansing breath, if you will, please. And relax right where you're seated. And notice how perfectly the chair supports your weight. And together we turn within. We move inward, recognizing the indwelling presence of God. There is a power. There is a presence. There is the infinite intelligence of all the universe, and it is right here, right now, because there is no place where it cannot be. And so we feel the presence of love within us as we return to love, as we become more and more aware that there is something grand going on right here in this sanctuary. And certainly at the core of every person sitting in a chair or listening to the words of this prayer. I feel the love of God within me, and I know it is the activity of life itself. It is the movement of wisdom. It moves through our bodies. It moves through our relationships. It is active in every way in our lives. And when we focus on it, when we are aware of this union, it expands in such a way that possibilities abound. I feel the love of God, and I know it is that very essence of life, the ultimate reality that invites us to see that whatever is before us, that we feel limited in any way, whether it is an illness, whether it is a problem in a relationship, it is a financial matter, it doesn't matter, because even there, God is right there in every cell of our bodies. We have the perfect DNA of God. And as we call on this, as we are aware of this, this is our freedom. This is our truth revealed to us. This is the way we return to love and love ourselves so much that we can contemplate the amazing way in which God works within us as that indwelling presence. And the way in which everything in this universe is in perfect synchronicity, that the planets know how to spin and move, and that the universe expands just as our own lives expand with greater and greater potential for good. And so I affirm and I know and I claim for each and every person here, I claim for this community that same well-being, that we are given all that we need. The grace of God pours into our lives. Even now, we open ourselves to become vessels to receive that good. And we just move into that experience of gratitude. And I say, thank you, God. Thank you, God. Thank you, Infinite Spirit. For as we experience that quickening within our own lives, the healing of our own physical bodies, the mending of our relationships as we are rewoven together, It is simply our own awareness that we give thanks for. And so I love this pattern of life. And I know that we are washed clean this day, and we begin anew again in the morrow. And in that deep, deep spirit of gratitude, I simply release this prayer into that divine law that is always working, always manifesting, always saying, yes, my child. I let it be, and together we say, and so it is.